this is the next face of cannabis. We are the big sister of cannabis, and that it will work, and it's not the days of tits and ass anymore. You know, it is the days of the modern consumer.
This segment is brought to you by My Jane. My Jane is a community enabling women to make informed health and wellness choices about cannabis. My Jane talk with cannabis brands that care about women to learn even more about ingredient sourcing, dosing, sizing, packaging, and more. They then brought together a team of female brand ambassadors to deliver right to your door at your convenience. Go to myjane.com for more information.
Welcome to the first episode of Capital Caffe. I'm your host, Christina DiGiovanni, CEO of The Emerald, woman in weed, entrepreneur, ganjapreneur, doing it all just like yourselves. This show is dedicated to all the women that are, have, and are trying to get into the financing game. Capital Caffe is about the experiences that we have to go through in order to get funded. Roughly 2% of investment capital goes to women. For every $1 that's invested in a woman, she returns $2, unlike our male counterparts. I want to share with you on this first episode my journey into being an entrepreneur, my journey going into cannabis, my journey going through financing, where my company is now, where we're going. And I want to share with you this season the journey of other women. We're going to have some great guests on the show, but admittedly, it was almost hard to find these guests because not enough of us are being financed. My goal with the show is to help you learn different paths, maybe take some advice away from this show to really lead you on a path of success in this cannabis industry and women running businesses in general across the platform bring so much value, insight, and knowledge to the table, and we are underfunded. I want to tell you a little bit about my story and how I got to where I am now. When I was in high school, I got caught smoking weed. My parents constantly searched my room. They felt I couldn't be trusted. My dad threatened to put me in rehab because I would not stop smoking cannabis. So about a year into high school, I start to become the black sheep of the family, which is fine. I've always been one of the more social of my family members. You know, I never met a stranger when I was growing up. I love talking to people. I love socializing. And cannabis was a natural addition to my lifestyle. It really brought out the better in me. I enjoy cannabis. I've always enjoyed cannabis, and I'm dedicating my life to this plant. When I was roughly 14 or 15 years old, because of the drama that the cannabis had caused in the family, it was decided that I would go to boarding school. So I went to an all-girls boarding school in New Jersey. And my dad's side of the family actually lived in northern New Jersey, so I wasn't too far from relatives, even though my immediate family was living in Austin, Texas. So I go through my sophomore, junior, and senior year at this all-girls boarding school called Purnell. And after that, when it came time to apply to college, I knew that I wanted to still be connected to the herb, and I knew that I wanted to go somewhere where I could express myself and not be surrounded by, I don't know, unlike-minded people. So I Googled hippie colleges of America, and it led me to High Times website. And they listed the top 10 most liberal colleges in the United States, and Humboldt State University was number one. So I looked it up, and they had a nursing program at the time, and I was excited. I wanted to be a psychiatric nurse. That's what I originally set out to be. And I got to Humboldt State. I loved it. It was a small campus. It was a great community. It was gorgeous. Humboldt County in the North Coast is just like a scene out of a movie. It is absolutely stunning. So I went to college there. I did my first few semesters. And unfortunately, Humboldt State at the time was getting rid of the nursing program due to budget cutbacks. So I switched to journalism because I always wanted to be Diane Sawyer when I was growing up. So I switched to journalism. And by the time I got to my last semester in my senior year, I
was raided. I was living with a boyfriend at the time who was a cannabis farmer, and he had gotten caught on an Amtrak train coming from Chicago to Sacramento. They did not arrest him. They asked if they could search his luggage. Supposedly, this is a notorious corridor for trafficking. They profiled him. He, you know, looked like a lumberjack, and they approached him and they said, you know, this is a notorious corridor for trafficking. Do you know anything about that? He said, no. They said, do you mind if we search your luggage? He said, no, not without a warrant. They searched his luggage anyways. They found bulk currency. They didn't arrest him, but they told him, if you file for this money, we will bring charges against you. So that was the first civil asset forfeiture we experienced. They took his cell phone. They took the money out of his wallet. They basically left him stranded on this Amtrak train. So he was unable to call me and let me know what had happened. I wake up at about 9 a.m., this is on a school morning, my last semester of college, to a cop knock at the door. And I open the front door, and it's the entire Humboldt County Drug Task Force standing in my yard. They had their bulletproof vests on. They had their guns drawn. My landlords actually lived next to me, and they were an elderly couple, and I felt so bad for them because they were so petrified. And they asked me if I knew this individual. And then they told me that they smell fresh growing cannabis. And that was enough for them to enter the home. We were not growing cannabis at our house. Again, our landlords were living right next door to us. That's how law enforcement entered. They searched our entire home without a warrant. We waited about 5 hours for a judge to sign a warrant. And once he did, they located additional bulk currency in the attic. I was arrested for possession of marijuana with intent to distribute. I own a couple firearms, possession of a firearm in the commission of a felony. And I also had a third bedroom in my house at the time where I kept, and I feel so stupid about this to this day, I kept a paper grocery store bag full of trim that I had intended on making edibles with someday. I have no idea. I should have just thrown it away, but it was one bag, and they charged me with, or they arrested me for, harboring a room for drug manufacturing. So they pretty much put whatever charges they could on me to seize the money that they had found in the attic, and I was arrested. I was in jail for a few hours. I was able to get bailed out. And while I was sitting in there, you know, I felt my civil rights were violated. I felt my civil rights were just an illusion. They were just something to keep us docile as citizens, you know, to believe in the right to fight. And I decided, you know, I'm earning a degree in journalism right now, so I'm going to put my degree to use. And the pen is mightier than the sword. And I'm going to start a magazine, a platform for the little man to be heard. Now, initially, I couldn't come out as this cannabis magazine. I had an open court case for over 9 months, you know, and that was a very stressful, tumultuous time for us. My partner and I, we were able to stay together. We stayed together for an additional 2 years, I think, after that. But it's very stressful. We were going through court, and court is designed to break you down. And we did our best with what we had, but that, like I said, was a very, very tough time for us. So fortunately, during this time, I had the Emerald magazine to use as a sort of therapy. So I told my attorney what I was doing, and he said, please, please don't do anything to jeopardize this case. Please. He's working very hard. Please don't do anything stupid, basically. And I was like, don't worry. I showcased Humboldt County, and I showcased eventually after that the Emerald Triangle in a positive lifestyle, you know, proving that it was much more than cannabis. It was much more than its reputation of cannabis. So it was a traditional lifestyle magazine, and I did that for a few years. And then eventually I rebranded into a cannabis lifestyle magazine because I knew there was a need for positive representation in this industry. You know, no longer was the days of tits and ass. It's the days of the everyday consumer. I live right now in a building. I was thinking about this with 6 units, and the other day it reeked of weed, and I thought about every person in this building And I think every person in this building smokes weed. It's an every person type of plant. And that was the type of magazine that I wanted to build. So fast forward, it's 2020 now. Been doing the Emerald for 8 years. About a year ago, I moved out to New York. I had spent the last 7 years in California, you know, really growing with the industry and trying to profile all the amazing entrepreneurs that are out there in cannabis. And I went to MJ BizCon in November 2017. I went to MJ BizCon in Las Vegas, and one of my best friends came with me. And we had been drinking obviously the night before because it's Vegas and we were doing the after parties. And so she was hungover the next day to wear her business suit. So she asked me, "Do you mind if I wear the Emerald hoodie?" And I said, "No, that's totally fine. Wear that." So she wore it, and someone from Scentsy magazine had saw it on the convention hall floor and said, "Oh, Emerald Magazine, I see you in my territory." And I said, "Oh, really? Where's your territory?" And he said, "Boston." And I said, "All right, well, that's fair. We do some print distribution in Boston." And he was like, "Well, you know, it's very nice to meet you. This is my banker." And he introduced me to his banker. And I was like, wow, you know, I need a banker. This is the type of person that I need that can take me from just a print magazine to a full-blown media corporation. And I talked to him for a little bit, and he gave me his card, and he said that his partner had raised capital for High Times. And I was like, okay, I'm definitely going to keep this guy's card. So after I got back to California, I kept in contact with him, and we basically, you know, started forming this business relationship. And in December for my birthday, I flew out to New York, stayed with a friend of mine, and went to go meet this banker and his partner and try to convince them to take me on as a client. You know, I mean, here I am, this, you know, young CEO trying to make it in this world. Advertising is a very hard gig. You know, I'm not worth $30 million like some of these overinflated valuations are on these companies. And I was very modest and very honest, you know, with what my sales were and who we were in the industry and the potential for us to grow. And they liked me. I mean, people that do business with you, they do it because they like you and, you know, because they believe in you. And so we locked into an agreement, and they said one thing: you have to come to New York because this is where the media is and this is where Wall Street is, and you need to come here. And I would do anything for my company. It's my child. It's 8 years old now, you know? I mean, we've been on this growth journey together, and I would do anything for my child. And I believe in my child, and I know what they're capable of. And so I did it. I packed my truck, I packed the dog, and I drove to my mother's house in Austin, Texas for Christmas. And then I drove up to Brooklyn the day after. And I got lucky. When I was up here earlier in December for my birthday, I looked at a vacant apartment closest to my best friend out here, and I met the super, and I talked to the landlord, and they basically said, "You know, you seem like an upstanding person, so we're just going to give this to you without running an application or credit check." And I was like, "Oh my gosh, this is crazy. I'll totally take it." So it felt as though everything was falling in line. It felt like this was the right move. It felt like this was the next step, the next chapter of where we needed to be. So, you know, in January 2019, we set out, my two bankers and myself. We hit the New York City streets, schmoozing, going to events, going to dinners, going to drinks. I mean, it sounds luxurious, but it's work and it's draining after a while. And someone who's certainly not used to the New York hustle, it took some time to really just fall in. And, you know, I went to cigar bars to close deals because that's where deals are made. They're made in cigar bars. I went to strip clubs, you know, I did it all to try to, you know, woo these investors into believing in me, believing in this 29-year-old CEO that believes that, you know, this is the next face of cannabis. We are the big sister of cannabis and that it will work. And it's not the days of tits and ass anymore. You know, it is the days of the modern consumer and we are the face of the modern consumer. And after 6-7 months, on July 1st, we closed on our first investment. And on July 2nd, we closed on our second investment. The first investment actually came from my dad's boss, whose company had advertised with us a long time ago, looking to break into cannabis, wanted to kind of get a feel for the industry. So when I talked to him in, I don't know what month it was, maybe April 2019, I think we were talking about advertising. And he said, oh, what are you doing in New York? I said, well, I'm going through fundraising. You know, I'm trying to raise money for the Emerald. I'm trying to build this platform. And he said, well, you know, I am looking for an in into cannabis. And I said, well, would you like to be an equity partner? And that's how I was able to obtain my first investor. You know, I think it's really challenging for a lot of people in cannabis, circling around those in cannabis. There are a lot of people on the outside of this industry that want in and they don't know how to get in. Think of people outside the box, family and friends, first round, family and friends is really, you know, that's what worked for us. And then my second investor was through my banker, who was able to talk to one of his friends. You know, his friend really likes to invest in companies that go public. This is obviously a private company and we don't plan to go public. One of our major competitors attempted to go public and we're still watching how that's turning out for them. So, you know, I was able to land a promissory note. And for some of you that might not know what that is, it's basically a loan unless if they decide to convert it into equity later. So for me personally, as an entrepreneur, you know, I'm on the fence. Do I want that equity back and return the money plus interest? Or do I want to, you know, have them as an equity partner? So I closed on those on July 1st and 2nd. And then I did what I set out to do. I got a little office space, which is really a commercial storefront, hired a little staff, you know, got a bunch of different verticals going with what we closed on, which was not a lot. It was a modest amount, but we were able to hire a staff. We were able to, you know, work towards accomplishing these goals and these dreams that have been long overdue. We have podcasts now, we have videos now, we have daily digital content, we have newsletters, just really working towards building a platform for women, by women, that have these great ideas, you know, these great companies that deserve the exposure for the little man. It always goes back to the little woman, the little guy, and having a microphone for them and having a platform for them to dream and accomplish their goals. And that's something that's been very important to me along this way as an entrepreneur, because the road is not easy. There are nights when I remember going out to the hill and Humboldt County, trimming for an entire week and then coming back with my trim money and paying the printer and paying the writers and keeping the show running and working something over here to make this work over here. It's many times, you know, do people have doubt, the doubt, but there is a solution. And for me, it was finding a banker that took me on as their client and introducing me to that world and that sphere of finance and asking for help, asking for advice, you know, forming an advisory board. All of that really plays in, all of that really helps. And of course, you know, if you're able to get a team, that's amazing. It's a blessing. If you're doing it solo, hang in there. We all do a lot of stuff solo. And I just want to give props to the women that are in it. And I wish you guys the best. We're still in it. Emerald is still in the finance game. We're out in Brooklyn now. We got our little team going, but the journey is not over. 2020, we're setting out for $500,000 this year. And I hope we can close. I hope we can continue to bring all of our followers, readers, and fans. Like, I hope we're able to bring you documentaries, you know, content, hard-hitting content. We were a monthly print magazine for the last 7 years. 2020, we're going quarterly. So, you know, we're really going for a larger, maybe tabloid size magazine, you know, an art-based magazine to really just embrace embrace the artful side of the culture and to really showcase the many different aspects of cannabis. And so I just want to thank all of you for being a part of Emerald and helping us grow along with you. You know, we want to grow your companies and, you know, we want you to grow with us and we want to grow with you. And we're stronger in numbers and together we can grow. And so thank you very much for listening to the first episode of Capital Kathy, from my home to yours. I wish you all the best this year, and we will have many great episodes coming up on this season, many amazing women that are going through the process. And so again, I hope you all have a wonderful year, and thank you so much for listening.
This next segment is brought to you by Satori Wellness, McKinleyville's first and only medical and recreational cannabis dispensary located in Humboldt County, California. They have many local products to choose from, as well as products you won't find anywhere else locally, including flower, clones, and seeds, concentrates, edibles, topicals, tinctures, body products, and so much more. Their products are clean and laboratory tested. Go to satoriwellness.org for more information.